So today is the second day of this four-day retreat on the mind trainings here in Tampa, Florida. Yesterday we spent a full day working on the first slogan, first train in the preliminaries, including a 2.5-hour session, even keeping everybody up late last night to make sure that we really understood not just the conceptual meaning of them, but really understood their implications, profound transformative implications for correcting our distorted view of what's going on in this life and what the purpose and meaning of being born a human being is. As was said yesterday, I tried to share with you, to have a discussion with you about the facts of life. Maybe that's what we should have called this retreat. The facts of life. And hopefully, through that full day of practice and discussion, they have begun to sink in a little bit. For some, maybe a lot. As I said yesterday, in the tradition in which these preliminaries are practiced, people practice them for months and months, day in and day out, until they get real results. How do you know you get real results? Because when you observe the world within and without, the changes that throw you now, disturb you now, no longer do that. And immediately you say to yourself, impermanence. This is the nature of phenomena. When you do that, you've got it. Right? When you look at the ups and downs of your life, your emotion, and other people, and rather than being annoyed or angry or sad or disappointed or scared or frustrated or I can't believe this or whatever, you go, oh, causes and conditions. Oh, causes and conditions. Right? And when suffering arises within your mind, within your body, within the bodies of others, the lives of others, the lives of the world, you understand. This world we live in is not nirvana. It is not a world free of suffering. It is samsara. Is that clear? Right? I mean, don't go to China and wonder, why are all these people speaking Chinese? You know? Why are all these people eating Chinese food? What's going on here? Okay? You're in China. Right? Is that clear? We are in what is called samsara, the world of birth and death. The world of egoism and self-centeredness. Look around you. Look within you. Magnify it 6 billion times. You got a sense of what's going on here. Now, if there is the slightest shred of altruism in your mind, and you would like a world of loving, caring people, people who are not selfish, self-centered, people who really care about each other and want to take care of each other, care about the planet, right? If that's the kind of world you want, a world where people are not aggressive, people are peaceful, become that kind of person. You know? become that kind of person. Right? Eradicate all delusion, egocentricity, anger, aggression. I mean, you know, all afflictive emotions. Right? Practice selflessness. Give up self-cherishing. You know, that's a good start to a better world, isn't it? We are so easily bandy about these altruistic declarations, right? We bandy about these disappointments, how the world is and how people are. And yet, if we look into our own minds, we might be surprised by what we see, how little we actually care for one another. How little real compassion there is within the outside of my own little circle. Right? And yet we expect the people of the world to be so different. Is that clear? It's a little warm in here, or is it me? Maybe, you know, it changes. You know, that's this system here is, you know, it's more going to be done, just not on the degrees, but how it feels. We've been coming here many years. So yesterday, was a very important day. I got some notes. Please speak about duality as it relates to our Buddhist practice. Fred, if the four preliminaries are impermanence, causing conditions, unsatisfactoriness of the world, and precious human birth, where is the teaching of no self? Isn't that a preliminary teaching? So those we'll get to. But the most important one I got was this one. Please pay close attention. Okay? It would be nice to know everyone's name and where they are from. Shall I read it again? It would be nice to know everyone's name and where they are from. Now, this is not third grade. I'm not going to ask the person who wrote this note to stand up. I am sure whoever they are very well-meaning. I mean, do you get it? Do you get why the teachers talk about the upside-down bowl, the leaking bowl, and the dirty bowl? I mean, it's like, here we have these precious teachings being transmitted to us, and we're thinking what? What? We're thinking what? I wonder what everybody's name is and where they live. Right? It's like that's the most important thing. And we wonder why we don't get anywhere in our practice. Zen Dzogchen is about stepping into reality and going beyond labels. Right? Here we have an opportunity of being present to each other in a very direct and intimate way. We have a chance to know one another, right, without needing to label. Right, it's like, you know, you're outside and you see a plant or a flower and you know, your awareness touches it and you know it because you see it as it is. And right away the mind goes, what? I wonder what this is called. As if somehow that's like a significant piece of information. We are data collectors. We are collectors of meaninglessness. Is that clear? I mean, I'm very delighted that this person sent this profound note, that they were brave enough to acknowledge how scattered our minds are and where they just go off in all directions. Is that clear? This Dharma is precious. It has been preserved by people who are willing to take the words and the meaning and put that into practice in their lives so they could have realization That is the only way it is preserved. If you don't preserve it for yourself, preserve it for the next generation, or it will die out. So good. So before we go to the next slogan, are there any lingering questions about first train in the preliminaries and everything that we discussed yesterday? I know you've been practicing diligently. Yes, Alex.
Well, this is about how you began your first Dharma talk. And, since I'm ready for the stick.
Mm-hmm, good. Now, you're doing it because you really mean it, not just for the...
Not because I want to stay.
No, or not because you want to show off or anything.
No.
Okay.
Very sincere.
Okay, good.
You started off by saying that Dharma is not about technique.
Right.
And it's not about our issues.
But please understand, I didn't say it doesn't have techniques within it and it doesn't deal with our issues, but that's not what it's about.
Right.
Okay.
Developmental model where you start with your teacher at one level,
mm-hmm.
and then you progress and you develop and you become, appreciating the Dharma at a
mm-hmm.
different level.
Mm-hmm.
And if you didn't have those techniques and you weren't
mm-hmm.
working through your issues along that path, then you wouldn't be able to transform and heal. And I think since it is a developmental model, depending on where you are when you enter the Dharma,
mm-hmm.
you're going to have a totally different journey and experience.
Yeah, so that's an excellent point, and that in Buddhism that's called upaya, right? Skillful means, and that is why the Dharma is not one size fits all, and why the Buddha gave a whole variety of teaching, and why there are, if you look, look at Buddha's teaching, there are three yanas, and the yanas, there are all these different lineages, and why in our own practice community we have a developmental model. So in that sense, you're right. Okay, everybody begins where they begin, and everybody has a different entrance point to the Dharma. Again, one of the things we're doing in our community is to kind of really not only have a developmental model with the three paths, but also really begin to call our retreats and intensives, kind of delineate what path they're about. And so this is a Dharma path retreat. This is not, I realize there are people here who are in the mindful living intensive, but again, this is if this was an intensive on mindful living, I would not be saying the things I say, okay? But I'm saying the things I say because of this, okay? Because this is what is being presented here, and I feel as a transmitter of this, my integrity has to be with this. Hopefully, I am presenting it in a skillful way that the hearers can absorb. All right. So is that clear? I mean, again, I am under the impression that everybody who has come to this retreat, read the description, knows that this is about the Dharma, and so I really want to make sure. For those who might have been practicing the Dharma as some really beneficial techniques, and have been practicing the Dharma, to work on their issues, right? I'm doing my best to say to take them to the next level. Okay, so I'm not, please understand. With upaya and skillful means, that's why for many academics or people like that, Buddhism seems very confusing and often contradictory, right? Because they look at the full breadth of the Buddha's teachings and go, but over here you're saying this, and over here you're saying that, and, over here you're saying, meditational deities are real, and over here you're saying they're just, again, it's because it's a developmental model of understanding, okay, that deepens. So thank you for raising that point. Any other questions before we move on? Yes.
Mm-hmm. That doubting voice came back in vengeance.
That self-doubting voice.
Yes.
Okay, so it's important to understand that there is in Buddhism questioning who am I, and I mean deeper kind of issues is okay.
And it was like, yeah, sure, Fred's a lay person, but he spent 20s, you know, studying law. Mm-hmm. He didn't do that, and my heart was racing. I was really kind of in pain.
Good.
And then I thought about the four contemplations, and I was thinking about how, you know, in my life, the circumstances of my life now, I spend a lot of time cultivating dispersion and take refuge in money and prestige a lot of the time. And that's what I need to change. It's not mm-hmm. my circumstances. That's okay.
Right. Right. And again, see, it's interesting. I mean, that's why this mind of ours, you know, there is this saying in Dharma, all perceptions are deception. All perceptions are deception. I mean, you know, so another way of saying, oh, Fred, you know, lucky guy, of course, he could do it because, you know, he went to, in you know, in teachers in the 20s and 30s. Oh, well, isn't that wonderful? I don't have to do that, you know? I don't have to travel 7,000 miles and sleep on hard beds, you know, and get bitten by bed bugs and, you know, get all kind of intestinal, you know what I'm saying? You know, isn't that wonderful? I can stay home and everything, and Fred will kind of spoon feed it to me. You see what I'm saying? I mean, wow, how fortunate I am. But you see, this stupid mind of ours, it'll turn it into another self-defeating drama, you know, and we don't even know it, do we? Because we're so used to this, you know, we're so used to this internal dialogue, you know, that is just plain wrong. It's just, you know, I mean, again, we hear these things all the time, right? Delusion, right? We are deluded. We don't see clearly. We misperceive, right? We hear this all the time. And yet we never think that it applies to me. These are like general concepts, but we never think, oh, this voice in my head that's continually commenting on everything, that could be the voice of delusion. Oh, you see that one? I mean, do you see how pernicious this is? Because we are so identical. You know, Buddhism considers our delusion a fundamental kind of misidentification. That's another way. You know, we identify the self with these thoughts as me, rather than that which is aware of these thoughts. Right? And so, are we clear, David? And again, you know, you're right. You know, your wife, your child, your job, you know, the income you earn is not an obstacle to transformation unless you make it. Right? It can just be a wonderful opportunity. Right? To how fortunate I am. And to use these things to really, benefit others, if you have good means, you know, take care of yourself and your family. And if there's extra, what good can I do with this in the world? Unfortunately, you know, your relationships with your wife and child, fertile ground for compassion and understanding, patience, you know, looking at your own issues. Right? Wonderful opportunity. Right? Now, this is fascinating to me. And I think this is the unique thing about, the Buddhist path at this level. It begins with the preliminaries, right? These kind of foundation practices about how the world really is. To turn, you know, again, these are also called the mind turning, to turn our mind away from all these pursuits that are based on ignorance and delusion, to turn toward, to turn away from a meaningless life and meaningless pursuits and activities, or basic ones that are ultimately unsatisfactory, and to turn our life toward meaning and purpose and fulfillment and happiness, okay? Now, what does it do? The next section is training in bodhicitta, and it begins with what is called absolute or ultimate bodhicitta. It goes, you know, from the kind of, we could say from the preliminaries, it jumps right to the mountaintop. It's really kind of wonderful. So now, and again, I continue reading from the commentary by Jamyan Khantral on these slogans. So now in this section, after it says first train in the preliminaries, now it says the actual practice, training in bodhicitta. With bodhicitta is the Sanskrit word that means, has many meanings, but basically means our enlightened mind, our bodhi mind, our Buddha mind, our awakened mind. So now we're going to, you know, this is what Dharma practice is about, training in bodhicitta. And he says there are two sections of this, of actual practice. The first of those related to ultimate or absolute, and those that are about the relative. And we'll talk about those in a minute. Okay? So they begin with the ultimate unconditioned aspect of bodhicitta. Okay. Well, let me get into it, and then we can talk about it. So he says in meditation, again, the same thing like earlier, begin after the practice of guru yoga, sit with your body straight, breathe in and out, count without disturbance, 21 breaths over and over again, and this exercise will render you a suitable vessel for meditation practice. How many of us think about that, right? You know, before, you know, we just kind of plop down on the cushion, right? You know, and he says, no, you know, the preliminaries make us a suitable vessel for meditation. I mean, please remember that. All of us are heedless in that regards. So the reason, you know, in this meditative practice of reflection, of contemplation, of mindfulness, of single point of concentration, of insight, right? These are practices that have the power to heal and transform me. Before I begin, I need to become a suitable vessel to receive them, right? Oh, so please remember that. So when you sit down on your cushion, if your mind is distracted, if you're still mulling over some hurt or resentment or fear of the day, you know what I mean? If you're in a bad mood, God knows what, you know, we're capable of anything. You know, don't jump into your meditation, right? Take some time to make yourself a, you know, generate gratitude, you know? Gratitude, appreciation, precious human birth, all the advantages we have, how fortunate I am. Okay? Generate gratitude. Generate the contemplations to put things in perspective. Think of the lineage. You know, we should be ashamed. See, one of the reasons that we sit before a Buddha, one of the reasons that we imagine the lineage and our teachers, that we're in their presence, is to kind of make us a suitable vessel. Right? And oftentimes we should have shame, and this is shame in a good, I know for many people shame is a bad thing, and I understand that for the kind of shame that people carry around, but there's a good sense of shame. You know, a good sense of remorse. You know, here I am in the presence of the enlightened ones undertaking the practices they have given us, and I'm just what? You know, just category, you know, categorizing my resentments of the day. I'm just thinking about, you know, I'm just getting my, there's Bill. I'm just getting my Home Depot list together. Right? You know what I mean? I would go, oh, forgive me, Buddha. Like, we need this kind of stuff. Can you see? We need this kind of stuff. It's left to our own devices. We do things like that. Okay? So, this exercise will render you a suitable vessel for meditation practice. Now, for the actual practice, and now this is the second slogan, regard all phenomena as dreams. Regard all phenomena as dreams. Let me just read his commentary. Actual phenomena, that is the world and its inhabitants. So now he's talking about the external world, not the world of the mind. Actual phenomena, that is all the things, the world and its inhabitants are objects that we grasp at with our senses. Okay. All the phenomena, the objects the eyes see, sounds the ears hear, smells, tastes, sensations, right? All of these objects that appear to our senses, the senses grabs at. Right? Makes contacts and goes toward. These appearances are simply our mind's manifestations of confusion. In the end, they are not actually existent in any way whatsoever, but are like the appearances in a dream. By thinking along these lines, train yourself to have some feeling for looking at the world this way. Okay. So again, even though he's presenting this very profound view of phenomena, he's implying, you know, you may not have come to full realization yet, so just begin to train yourself so you have some kind of sense, some feeling that perhaps this is the way the world is. Okay? So again, we're getting right to the heart of deep dharma. You know, every day you chant the Heart Sutra, which is another way of putting this. So, the phenomena we see, hear, smell, taste, touch, and feel, all the things of the world, how do we know them? What? How do we know all the phenomena of the world? Through our senses, but through our minds. It is our mind that is aware of all these things, right? I mean, if I just had two eyeballs here, right? And a nose down. You know what I'm saying? Right? It is the mind, right, that is operating through the senses that knows the objects. Is that clear? So what he is saying here, all the appearances that come through the five senses are appearances of in, within, of the mind. Okay, is that clear? How do we know what we know? With mind. Mind is the basis of our experience, and mind is the basis of all that we see, hear, smell, taste, touch, and feel. These are just appearances in the mind. They have no inherent validity or self-existent as last night's dream. So this is the example. It is like a phenomena, the phenomena that we experience in our senses is no different than a dream. In a dream, right? Everybody here dream? Please think about your dreams. In your dreams, you see things, right? You hear things, you smell things, you taste things, and you feel things, don't you? You have a whole range of emotions, you do. You encounter people, you do all kinds of things, right? In a dream, right? And it all, when you're in the dream, does it all seem real? Yes. You actually think that's what's happening is happening, don't you? Is that true? Right. It has the same kind of reality that this has. Right? I mean, maybe this is a dream. And we'll wake up from this. And when we wake up from this, we'll go, that was just a dream. Maybe this is a dream. Who was it? Schwanzo something said, am I a man dreaming about a butterfly, or am I a butterfly dreaming about a man? Which is it? Now, we would say that in a kind of, in a dreamlike way, our dream has a certain validity, right? Because we are having kind of a real experience, aren't we? We're having an experience, aren't we? So in a certain sense, dreams are kind of real, but we know all that we are experiencing through our senses in the dream, including emotions, our physical body is inert, isn't it? We are asleep. Is that true? So we're having a full range of experiences of all the senses, and yet our body and all the senses are not active. Is that true or not? And yet we're having a full range of human experience in our dream. But the truth is, that whole experience is going on where? In our mind. What he's saying is, it is the same. As we look out in the same way that the forms that we perceive in the dream have no inherent reality. They are just created by our mind. They have no inherent reality. And when the dreamer stops dreaming, the dream ceases. In the same way, the way the world appears to us as a solid, permanent, self-existent, real thing is not true. It is our confusion that perceives it that way. Because in truth, everything that we perceive as an object is inherently empty of any solidity or self or self-existent, right? This gets into teachings on emptiness, on codependent arising, but it's kind of simple, right? Our mind grasps at things and we see things as objects. So like I say, oh, there's Alex, right? But that is a label that I am putting on that, right? And if I make any statement about that thing called Alex as if he's a real entity, permanent and solid, it is not true. Because Alex would say to me, scientifically, my body isn't a solid, permanent thing. It's constantly, even at this moment, in a process of changing and shifting and unfolding, right? And your mind is constantly changing, thoughts, feelings, perceptions, constantly changing according to causes and conditions, your action. So actually, you know, that's a process that has no inherent stability or permanence. And yet the mind will say, oh, there's Alex. And then it'll decide, I like him, I don't like him, I'm happy with him, I'm not happy with him, he's a this, he's a that, right? It'll just continue to fabricate all kinds of stories as if that's really a thing. Right? But that's not a thing. That is something that is inherently has no any kind of permanent self-existent reality. There's no such thing as Alex even in there, is there? You've been looking for Alex? Have you ever found him? No. Right? I mean, the whole thing is a fabrication. Now again, like in a dream, you know, if I saw Alex in a dream, I'd say, hello, Alex. Alex might say, hello, Fred, right? We might have a conversation. But it's a dreamlike conversation. It has no solidity. It's just unfolding. Right? I mean, how many times have you woken up from a dream and you can't remember the dream? Right? And you try, you know. It's like, why can't you remember the dream? Because it doesn't exist anymore. Right? It doesn't exist anymore. And that Alex that I was talking to a minute ago is no longer there, right? This is dreamlike, this reality. It is just endlessly unfolding. As soon as it appears, it disappears. Every word I've spoken so far this morning has disappeared, right? Everything you've thought already today, every feeling, your highs, your lows, your you know, your issues, they're gone. It's dreamlike. It is dreamlike, this world. Phenomena is dreamlike. It is all just appearing into my mind, right? It's appearing in Bill's mind differently. He's having his dream over there. I'm having my dream. Diana's over there having her dream. Chris over there, he's having his dream. Right? The only thing we can say about it is, last night we all slept. And maybe last night we all dreamt. But after that, everybody's creating their own dream. Right? Everybody in this room is creating their own dream. But they don't know it. That's why he says these appearances are simply our mind's manifestations of confusion. Right? Because we're confused about what's real and what's not real. See, that's our essential confusion. There are practices that yogis practice called dream yoga, where they actually practice learning how to consciously dream, how to wake up in their dream, and actually make the dream go the way they want. Oh, I want to go to the Buddha field of Maitreya Buddha and get a teaching from him. And off they go. Let's have a good dream. Let's have a profound dream, right? So, we are in this dream world. Right? In the tantric tradition, they're called six bardos. And these are these various states, such as the bardo of sleep and dream. Which is the bardo in between life, in between death and rebirth, right? That's another transition. This is called the bardo of life. It is the bardo or the transition period between birth and death. And our job is to wake up in it, to see clearly what's going on. Regard all phenomena as dreams. It is not solid. It is impermanent. It is just causes and conditions, endless variables unfolding according to causes and conditions. That's all that's going on here. Any attempt just to create solidity or self-existence, you know, everything is just made up of parts, 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 parts. There's no such thing as a thing. Right? You know that. I mean, I've pulled flowers apart for you. Right? We call this, for those who haven't seen that profound demonstration. I'm not gonna do it. It's pretty, but again, we look at this and we call this what? Look at the flower, as if there's such a thing here called a real flower. There isn't. There is just this. And this is made up of all these little things. Right? And if I took all these little things, these green things, and I spread them out on the floor, who would go up and say, oh, look at the beautiful flower? Nobody would do that. Would you? No, what's changed? You put all these little petals or whatever they're called in a shape like this, and we call it a flower. We scatter about on the floor, and we call it trash. Why is that? Because there's no inherent thing called a flower. It's just parts that have come together temporarily. You know, this is in its transition too. It was a seed, became a plant, flowered. Somebody picked it. Somebody put it in a flower vase. It's on its way to death, dissolution, just like us. Why are things impermanent? Because everything is empty. Nothing's solid. If things were solid and permanent, this flower would always be that way. If there was such a thing as a flower, it would always be this. But this hasn't always been this. Right? So we can see to believe that somehow a thing is a permanent thing is a total misperception. It confuses us. Is that clear? Now, that fundamental confusion is not just a point of philosophical interest. It's profound. Because thinking things are real, thinking there's really something out there, and it's not just an appearance of my mind, and it's something solid and permanent, we do what? We grasp and avert. I want that. I don't want that. Right? So we enter the world of called attachment and aversion and indifference. Everybody know about that? But we don't even let it alone at that. Right? Based on attachment and aversion, because of this fundamental perception and misperception about the solidity of things, and they are not just appearances in my mind, when we don't get what we're attached to, we get what? We get angry. Right? We get sad. We despair. Right? When we imagine things unfolding, because of our attachment to ourself and the way we want things to be, when we imagine things unfolding in a different way, we get what? Scared. Anxious, worried, right? So, as we go deeper into our grasping, grasping at illusory phenomena that we think is real because of our fundamental misperception, and we attach and we avert and we try to manipulate, and then all these emotional afflictions arise, and all of a sudden our mind is just not only filled with confusion, but it's now filled with emotional affliction. Right? These are called the kleshas. Kleshas means covering. Our mind is now covered, right, with all this delusive thinking and misperceptions and emotionality. And everybody know what I'm talking about, right? And we think this is what it means to be a human being. No, this is what it means to be a deluded human being. That's what we are. We're deluded. Luckily, we have good medicine for our delusion. Luckily, we have manuals, right, that we can follow to get us out of it. I mean, we are very fortunate. So again, to begin to break out of this, we need this slogan, regard all phenomena as dreams. Then he said, now again, this is, he says, now you might wonder if that which is aware that all phenomena is dreams, right, is that real? Right? You get it? So now, you know, five senses looking out into the world. Oh, that's like it's all dreamlike. Has no substance. Just appearing and disappearing like a dream. But how about my mind? This mind that knows that. What is that? That must be real, right? There's got to be something real around here. Right. So the third slogan. This is profound, and you're going to be practicing this today. The third slogan is, examine the nature of unborn awareness. Okay, so now we're going and we're looking into this which is aware of that. You know, what is this? Okay, you know, you can see the logical progression. I mean, you know, so what is this? You know, that's aware that, you know, it's all like a dream. You know, what is it that knows that? And so this examine the nature of unborn awareness is the slogan that gets us investigating this, right? And he says, many of you who've been around a while, we have done these kinds of practices, but this is, you know, we can never do it too many times. So his explanation of the phrase, of the slogan, examine the nature of unborn awareness is, when you look directly at the presence of mind, no color, no shape, no form is perceived. Please, take a moment. We're going to be doing this later today, don't worry. Just look into this thing that is, you know, seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching. What do you see? He's saying it doesn't have a color, doesn't have a shape, and you can't find a form of this thing we call our mind. Please look at your mind now and tell me, do you see, does it have a certain form or shape? Is it a certain size? What do you see when you look into this thing that we call our mind that knows that all phenomena is dreamlike? When you look into that, what do you see? Nor is it located anywhere, inside or outside the body. Where, you know, most people say our mind is where? Or inside, or here. But actually, look into your mind and see, does it have a location? Finally, the mind is not some object that goes somewhere or ceases to be, right? I mean, he said, examine the nature of unborn awareness. So when you look into your mind, look into your awareness, can you, you know, does it start somewhere? Like, is there times when your awareness is like turned off? And then you throw a switch and it comes on. I mean, you had to be aware that there was a switch to turn on, didn't you? Right? So is this awareness, is this mind, does it have a beginning and an end? Does it have a birth and a death? Or is it birthless and deathless? By examining, investigating mind, you should come to a precise and certain understanding of the nature of this awareness, which has no origin, no location, or cessation. Okay? So, for the sake of time, I'm not going to spend a lot of time, but we will. This is what we're going to be working on today. Working meaning doing. I got to stop saying that word, because there are a lot of people in here just love that word. Love to work on things. We're going to be playing around with you, sister. Okay. So, externally regard all phenomena as dreams. Internally, that mind which is aware of that, what is that? Is that also dreamlike? It has no substance. There's nothing solid there at all. Okay? It has no beginning, no end, no shape. It's birthless and deathless. Is that true? Things are beginning to get deconstructed, aren't they? This is dreamlike. That which is aware is dreamlike. Nothing solid, permanent, self-existent anywhere. So he says, thoughts about this remedy, of this investigation into the mind, thoughts about this remedy for the tendency to cling to existence may come up. Because it is the nature of our grasping mind to always want to cling to something, right? The thought that there is nothing is very frightening to many people, confusing. So it's got to be something. Well, maybe this thing that sees, maybe this thing that sees that all phenomena is empty and like a dreamlike, and maybe this thing that is investigating the mind, right? Maybe that's real. Oh, thank God. So, thoughts about this remedy for the tendency to cling to existence may come up. For example, you may think, mind and body all are empty. Or nothing is helpful or harmful in emptiness, right? So now you are clinging to this sense that everything is empty for security. I get it now. Emptiness. That's the only thing. He says, if this happens, then, and this is the next slogan, even the remedy is freed to subside naturally. So, this investigation, this discovery of the empty nature of the mind, don't even cling to that. That's the remedy for our delusion, we think. Oh, now I see clearly. So I'll cling to my seeing clearly. Even the remedy is free to subside naturally. How is the remedy freed to subside naturally? We don't cling to it. If we don't cling to it, even our investigation, our insight, our understandings, what happens to them? In 1 second, they what? They fade away. Because they're empty too. Everything is. The teacher says, when you look at the presence of the remedy itself, these thoughts that you may be having about the absence of true existence of the mind, there is nothing for mind to refer to, and they subside naturally on their own. Relax in that state. So now these are given meditation instructions. You let all your thoughts subside. Your investigation, after you've done it, subside. Do not cling to the results like it's a thing, but let that subside and just relax. Now then he says, these lines, means the lines that have already been read, present the key instructions on the meaning of existence from the point of view of investigative meditation. Okay? Regard all phenomena as dream, examine the nature of unborn awareness, and even the remedy is free to subside naturally. He's saying these are the three pith instructions, right? On how to view phenomena in the mind. examine or investigate. Is that clear? It may not be clear. Is it a little clear? Okay, well, we'll have time for questions after this. Now, the next line. Rest in the nature of all, the basis of everything. Okay. So this is a key instruction, right? After you have deconstructed the external world as something solid and real, self-existent, right? And you have actually seen and understood, or have a sense of, even a little bit, of the dreamlike nature of this world, that this all phenomena, all appearances are just mind dreams, mind created. Even after you've investigated that which is aware of that, that which we call the mind, and see there's nothing solid or permanent or self-existent, there's no thing called a mind that we can find. And even after we've come to the conclusion that everything is empty, there's nothing really to exist, there's nothing to cling to, we let go of that. We let the remedy that we've just used, we let go of that to subside. And then he says, well, then the slogan says, rest in the nature of all, the basis of everything. And now his commentary. So that was the slogan. He says, this instruction presents the actual method of how to place the mind. So now we're getting into, after I've done my investigation, in Buddhism that's called Vipassana. Those who come out of the Theravada tradition, you've heard of Vipassana. It means investigation. This instruction presents the actual method now of how to place the mind. When there is no involvement with the activity of the seven groups of consciousnesses, now we're getting into Buddhist psychology, the seven consciousnesses are what? Eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, and mind. Would you say seven or eight? Well, there is eight, but let's... And the seven is the manovijnana, that is the seat of self, and that is the seat of all the emotionality. Okay, that is where the activity, the consciousnesses, the awarenesses of seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, and touching, and thinking, perceiving, right? Those are all six consciousnesses that are active, right? Now, at the seventh level of consciousness, there is this belief that all these six belong to me. Right? The eye doesn't know it's mine, does it? The eye just sees. The ear just hears. The nose just smells. Tongue just tastes. The body just senses. Right? And actually thoughts, you know, the mind just perceives thoughts, feelings, perception, you know, that's all that's going on, right? At the seventh level of consciousness, there is this manovijnana, this sense of I, this misidentification that all this belongs to me, right? That is not present in any of the consciousnesses. There's no self in any of our consciousnesses, even our mind, that which thinks and perceives. But it's at this seventh level that there is this sense of me. Right? This body, all the senses, all these experiences I'm having, all the emotions, all the thoughts, they are whose? They're mine. Begins in toddlerhood. And it only gets worse. And so by the time we get to be where we are, it is so solid, it is so reified, it is so pervasively, that we actually believe it's true. So the instruction presents the action of placing the mind. When there is no involvement with the activity of the seven groups of consciousness, there is still the nature of all phenomena, the natural state, which is the basis of everything. It is pointed out by the term, quote unquote, noble Buddha nature. Right? So at the basis of all this activity, seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching, thinking, remembering, you know, right? There is this basic fundamental awareness. Right? Our true nature, our true mind, our Buddha mind, our primordial mind, many different names, all pointing to the same thing. Again, you know, it is often described as it is mirror-like, right? In the mirror can reflect endless kinds of activities. Right? Beautiful, ugly, every mood, every face, every emotion, and yet that mirror is untouched by that which it reflects. Is that clear? This is the nature of this mind of ours. That is why, David, even though you identify David as this and that, and none of that is true. That is why, no matter how screwed up we are, no matter how heavy our karma, no matter how neurotic our mind is, at its base, it is this clear, open, unsullied, undefiled awareness, which we need to experience. So it is pointed out by the term noble Buddha nature. Let go and rest. For those of you who are weary of life, those of you who say, I am so weary of my thoughts, I am so weary of my drama of self. Right? Somebody said earlier today, they're so weary of it all, that when there was a guided meditation about 3 months to live, they would say, oh, how nice. Finally, I can rest. Well, we're being instructed to rest right now. To put it all down right now. Let go and rest. Without the slightest idea of a nature existing as something. Was absolutely no mental clinging, in a state distinguished by non-discursive clarity and pure simplicity. In summary, for as long as you're able, follow no train of thought, but rest evenly in a state in which mind is itself clear and free of discursiveness. Those who've been on retreat with me know that we do various practices, such as sky gazing, such as seeing the gap between thoughts, other types of resting and awareness practices to help us get a glimpse, taste, touch, to break through this world of fabrication and to see in between thoughts there is a gap. And in the gap there is nothing. And that one can rest there and begin to have a little taste of this pristine awareness. And again, there are many practices. So he says, this is what you do with the mind. Then you complete the practice period with the seven branch prayer. And finally, because tomorrow we're going to be doing relative bodhicitta. So those are the instructions for what we do in meditation. Is that clear? Regard all phenomena as dreams, examine the nature of unborn awareness, even the remedy is free to subside naturally, and rest in the nature of all, the basis of everything. And then the final, which is called the post-meditation instruction, which means when you arise from your formal meditative period and you wander about this world, right? That's what we do every day. Even though we think we're doing something, you know, we're just wandering about. Right? We wander about, we do this, we do that, we go here, we go there. We just wander about this world. At the end of the day, we crawl back into the same bed we came out of earlier. Right? Dream another dream. Wake up the next day, start all over again. Climb out of bed, wander about. Wander about our house, wander out into the street. Wander about in our cars, go to work, wander about, you know. Wander home later, maybe we wander into Publix or something for a while. Bill would stop, he'd wander into Home Depot. Wander up and down the aisles, what do I need today, you know? Wander on home, wander into the kitchen, you know, we just wander about. Eventually wander to the bathroom and bed. And we do the reverse, and it just goes, right? Day after day, wandering about. Okay, the instruction for post-meditation is, in post-meditation practice, be a child of illusion. Now again, this is a kind of a modern-day framing. Traditionally, it's more like in post-meditation practice, be like a conjurer of illusions. The conjurer knows that all his creations are what? False, they're all fabricated, right? The conjurer knows that. Other people may be fooled, right? Children may be fooled, adults may be fooled. You know, it's sort of like, an illusionist, right? Everybody else is fooled, right? Just cut that woman in half. And her toes are moving. I mean, she's smart, you know. Right? An illusionist, cartridge, right? It's illusions. But the one who's the illusionist, he or she knows that they're all tricks, right? He or she understands that. Someone who doesn't understand, they believe these illusions are real. There was a, you know, pull the rabbit out of the hat. Pull the silver dollar out of my ear. I mean, it's, you see? We don't know what's really going on. We believe the illusion. So, be a child of illusion or be like a conjurer who knows that all his conjuring is just his own or her creation. So he says, after meditation, do not allow the experience of resting evenly to dissipate, no matter what form of activity you engage in. Continually foster the feeling of knowing that all appearances, yourself, others, animate, inanimate, appear, though they seem to be nothing. Be like a child of illusion. A child of illusion is what? If you're a child of illusion, who's your parent? Illusion or the illusion? Oh, I'm a child of illusion. The sense that I am something is not real. It appears real. It looks real. But upon investigation, I have learned it's not real. There's nothing here. Nothing solid, nothing permanent. Not even that which is aware of all that and saying that is real in any inherent sense. Meaning, it has a temporary reality because it's occurring now, but it's gone. Right? Does everybody understand this? So let's take some questions. Again, we have gone from the preliminaries. We have gone from the four reflections, the mind turnings, the contemplations. all of it readily accessible, right, to our experience, to our logical thinking mind. Is that clear? And now we've taken a leap, right, to the deepest aspects of Dharma. And there's a reason why, again, if we were building, you know, step by step, we go, oh, let's start with the relative first, right? That which is more accessible to my day-to-day experience, my day-to-day mind, and eventually I'll get to the absolute, right? Is that, you know, I mean, that's how we would usually go, whoa, this is, this hurts my head just thinking about it. But there is a reason that is presented before the relative, which in this case will be the, you know, the whole teachings on taking and giving back, the exchange, receiving, you know, the practice of Tonglen. Because it's how do we approach that practice? See, many people approach that practice, already have told me, you know, it's hard, you know, my suffering, their suffering, taking it on, me, them. Everything is kind of solid. So these practices kind of have a heaviness to them that seems wearing. So that is why we are told first the way things really are. That even our exchange with others occurs within the illusion of permanence, of solidity. So these five are regard all phenomena as dreams, examine the nature of unborn awareness, even the remedy is freed to subside naturally, rest in the nature of all, the basis of everything, and in post-meditation practice, be a child of illusion. So when one arrives, if one has ended one's meditation by with this relaxed, resting awareness, if our mindfulness has brought us to a place of calmness and clarity, when one arises, goes about the world, maintain that. Don't immediately start thinking, gee, I wonder what everybody's name is and where they come from. Maintain that resting awareness. Maintain that capacity to stop fabricating, right, endless concepts about yourself in life. Be at ease. Right? I mean, like when you get up from here, what do you have to do? Go for a walk. I mean, come on now. Right? But, you know, there are people here who are going to make a drama about that. Doing it right, doing it not right. Thinking about what happened yesterday, then what's going to happen tomorrow, can't wait, this is over, I'm so bored. You know, it's like, you know, go for a walk, right? And then what do you have to do after going for a walk? Eat. I mean, where's the drama in that? I mean, you know, your mind can't be at ease when you're eating, when you're walking. Okay, let's continue. What do you have to do after that? Rest. I mean, are you clear what's going on in this world? You know, and then the bell rings, and what did you come down here? Mindful movement. Just follow the instructions. Right? Move your body around. That's all. After that, guided meditation. Just follow along. I mean, do you see how easy this life is? Anybody want to take issue with me? Watch your minds and see where your distress, drama, ups, downs, back, forth, is coming from. It's not coming from reality. Is that clear? So, after you've done your investigation into the nature of phenomena, nature of mind, rest. And if activity begins in your mind, you know, don't grab at it. Just let it be. Let it arise and disappear. There's nothing solid there. Thoughts just come and go, don't they? I mean, you know, how long does a thought last? How long does a thought last? Mr. Scientist, how long does a thought last? Yeah. which is in the realm of time. Not that it's nothing. Even in the realm of 24 hours, it's not like that big deal, is it? No. Just you know, let it unfold. Don't grab at it. Don't cling to it. Don't imbue it with meaning. So, any questions? Yes. Gunther and then. Or another interpretation is kind of dream-like, you know, yeah, so, yeah.
Which is, of course, the effect, right? Because all senses are interpreted, and then we interpret what all senses are.
So let me, no, this is, again, we are starting with absolute, and then tomorrow, I mean, these continue, and the whole rest of the slogans all deal with relative, with the application, okay? So the first thing is get the big picture, right? Get the big picture. Get the big view, right? Get the lay of the land, right? And that's what this is about. You know, you still have to, you know, like, you know, you start out on your hikes, right? You kind of see the, you know, you look at your maps, you kind of get the big view. You know, this is what it's going to be about. You maybe can see the top of the mountain. You kind of see the journey. You understand, you know, that when you do it, things will happen. Right? They're part of the journey. Right? But when you understand where you're going, right, and you understand that all the experiences you have on your journey are dreamlike, in the sense they don't exist. Right? Sometimes it let's say all of a sudden it starts raining, right? Rather than, treating it like a disaster, you understand it's just raining and, you know, I'll find shelter, or if I even get wet, eventually I'll, you know, this is not going to last forever. It's temporary, right? In that sense, it's dreamlike, right? And all I need to do is what? Just deal with it skillfully, right? Not like it's a crisis or a disaster. Not anything. Just fix it, right? That's all. Just deal with it. So it's big picture, okay? And actually, everything you're asking is about relative. So of course, you know, how to deal with a snake is very important too. In this dreamlike world, you may have dreams of snakes, In this dream of like world, you'd rather not get bitten by it. Charlie, you had a question. Well, actually, your eighth consciousness is called the Alaya Vijnana. It's not; it's the basis of that, the Alaya. But the Alaya Vijnana is a storehouse consciousness. When we talk about that everything we have thought or said or acted upon has left an impression, an imprint, that's where these are stored. So this is called the storehouse consciousness. That is why, they keep coming up, because they're stored somewhere. And causes and conditions bring them up. But also we know they just come up on their own too, without any causes or conditions. That's just kind of, things are just always coming out of the storehouse and going back down. Right. So that's a storehouse conscious, but the ground of that is the basis, the ground floor. So yes. Yeah, that's what the mind does. Have you noticed? And the mind's just going all the time.
To see with awareness and make a choice rather than act out of habit.
Yeah, mindful awareness is taking this natural capacity of awareness that is totally natural. Nobody knows how to create it. We don't know, it doesn't have to be turned on, it's always available to us, right? Right? Even when you're asleep, somebody comes in and calls your name and shakes you, you'll wake up. Why is that? Because awareness is here, right? You don't have to turn it on, right? Awareness does not go to sleep. Our physical body goes to sleep. But awareness is still present because we dream, we know, we continue. And we know that if somebody calls our name and shakes us, we wake up. Awareness is always present. Okay? Mindfulness is like the application. Right? And it is essential for our transformation. Right? So all of a sudden, this process we're describing of the eight consciousnesses and how they work and operate, we can be mindful of what's going on. And we can be aware of what creates affliction, what supports delusion, what supports confusion, and what supports clarity, and et cetera. We begin to make choices. But we can't do that unless there's this mindfulness, this awareness, this clarity. But if we're just, endlessly thinking about this and that, we're lost. Yes. I have no idea what I'm saying. this is the problem with city up here. Everything you say, you have to. Even though it immediately disappears, somebody will hold you responsible. Okay. So what I'm referring to in my ignorance is, as we go about the world, there can be things that occur that set off. A reaction, a spontaneous reaction of thought and perception or emotion that is coming out of our storehouse consciousness. But as we also know, as anybody who sat in meditation or retreat, we can be totally still and things will rise up. So there seems to be this kind of bubble thing where they kind of bubble around, and they bubble up on their own. Why do they bubble up? Because they're in our storehouse consciousness. So there is a causation why this thing is bubbling up. But again, we have so many experiences these days which aren't even our own. People tell us about their experiences. we watch movies, we do, so there's, our storehouse consciousness is much fuller than it used to be.
See
Well, of course, that's what practice is about. Again, they are imprints. Many of our habit patterns, our ways of thinking and reacting about ourselves in the world, are deeply imprinted. Because why are they deeply imprinted? Because we have just worked them. You know, work them day and night. Okay? And we wonder why they're so strong, as if somehow where'd this come from? You know, it's our creation. Okay? Again, through the process of no longer, when they arise as they will, grabbing onto them. Don't grab at phenomena, even mental phenomena. Just let them come and go. And if you can't let them come and go, then you deal skillfully with them. So they become transformed. So when they go back down into the storehouse consciousness, will they do? Because we've just had an experience with them, you know, they will go down not as intense, right? Intensification, duration, frequency, these kinds of things. Then they came up. Over time, transformation occurs, right? But don't think just because you get it, like you have an insight, that they're going to disappear. You know, the insight becomes real when you change your relationship to this when it arises. So when Dave changes the relationship to these self-doubting thoughts and all that, changes his relationship because, you know, his mindfulness sees them when they arise. He knows what they are. He knows, you know, the cause and conditions, and he no longer feeds them. You know, they will just, you know, go back down. Right? Our thoughts and emotions, they like an audience. They're narcissists. Right? They like an audience. Right? So when they come up and David goes, hey, yay, let's really chew on this one a while and really get myself bent out of shape, keep me from falling asleep. Yeah. Right? That little mind state is delighted. Look at all the attention it's getting from David. Right? It thinks it's loved. Goes back down. He loves me. Look at all the attention he gives me. Right? Can't wait to come back up again. See? And we wonder, why does it keep coming up? As if somehow it's separate from us. Yes, Mom.
Okay, so I'm looking at birth, and we have that, yes.
Okay, hold on a second. You are thinking about, you're having a thought about a thought. You're thinking about. So it's important that we really understand what's going on. You're having thoughts. The birth is a thought, and your thoughts about birth are more thoughts. So you're having lots of thoughts. Okay. Do you want to have them? Why? Why don't you just relax? Enjoy your breath. Everything's good. Everything's fine right now. See how we wander off? And right now you're going, but that's just important, right? We're in love with our thoughts. See, just relax. Right? Pretty flowers up here. Right? Surrounded by Dharma friends, you know. Lunch is in 15 minutes. Be at ease. No problems. No issues. Yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
How do I know? I mean, I really, like, it's not an illusion.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, there's a very clear criteria. The question is, you know, how do you know when you really get this stuff? Okay. we suffer all our suffering, all our emotional afflictions, all our ill at ease, all our anxieties, all our alienations, all right, are signs that we don't get it. Okay? When you are free of affliction, when your mind is at ease, at rest, and happiness and goodness and love and compassion and patience and generosity, selflessness, are your constant companions, you can say, I think I'm getting it. Okay? That's the proof. How do you know you're healthy and not sick? How do you know that? You feel it. Yes, Gary. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So therefore, So what choice do you want to make? Is that what you do all the time? Why not? Hey, Gary. I want you to do something for me. I want you to reach into your mind and show me an obscuration. Just right now, show me these obscurations that are preventing you. I'm not asking you to be specific. I'm asking you to show me the obscurations that are preventing you from not being angry. Show me them right now. Why not? Are they real? Hold on. If something cannot be seen, touched, or in any way, it doesn't exist. I mean, there has to be some reality we're dealing with here. Do these things exist as a permanent thing, these issues of yours, these kleshas of yours? Where are they right now? Where are they right now? They don't exist in any place. So where's your mind? It doesn't exist anywhere physically. It exists in something called the mind. Where's your mind? It's got to be somewhere if it exists. I mean, you say you have a mind. What are you talking about? Gary, my friend, that's the most intelligent thing you've just said. Okay, now just leave it there and rest. And smile. It's this easy. Don't get yourself all worked up. Kleshas too are dreamlike. If you take them as solid things, then you're stuck with them. They're dreamlike. They just come and go. When you know that, and you practice awareness of you, when they arise, you're not disturbed by them. Issues too are dreamlike in this dreamlike world. In this dreamlike mind arise dreamlike kleshas. Don't think, Gary. Don't think. That's the problem. What did we just hear in these teachings? Rest. Stop fabricating. And yet we are like what? addicts. Somebody said, oh, we're like addicts. We cannot give it up. As Master Bankei said, and I've quoted this 10,000 times, he said, it's like, you know, there's a blood stain on the floor, and we go get ourselves and we want to clean it up, and we go get ourselves a bucket of blood and dip our rag in it and start cleaning up, and we wonder why it doesn't go away, right? You will never free yourself by throwing more thoughts at delusive thoughts. You know, there are people here in this room who spent their whole life trying to fix things. You know, it is the mind, it is the delusive mind that creates these things called problems, right? And then the same delusive mind comes up with a solution to the problem that it created. And we think we're getting somewhere. That's crazy. Let it rest. Thank you. And so we will let it rest because it is 10 minutes to lunch. So please, in the guided meditations, who's ever doing the guided meditations? Don't spread confusion.